Good afternoon. It is Tuesday, May 31st, 2016. We are here for the 3 p.m. general discussion. We have Commissioner Heck, but not Commissioner Hare. First up on the agility. Am I thinking about horses? Agility classes? Court facilities. How's that, Dana? Equestrian confused with court facilities.
We're at the starting gate.
Okay, come on up. Stick it on your feet. Come on up. And Wally, I think all of you need to be up here, right?
Okay. Item number two, principal.
The court facilities survey. Survey issue.
Yeah, as you know, the Association of Oregon Counties, in partnership with the Oregon Judicial Department, they're taking a more active role in courthouse, whether it's improvement or replacement. So at this point, they are looking out, 12 years from now, I'm not doing math, whatever that is. And they sent out a survey to counties asking a real basic couple of questions. One is, do you foresee the need to replace your courthouse in the next 12 years?
Repair or replace?
Repair or replace.
Yes.
The answer is yes. So now what do we do? If Cascadia comes along, it'll be total replacement.
My recommendation and thought on this is that it's given the state of our courthouse, while we did some improvements in terms of fire alarm and things like that, I don't believe we've done much in terms of seismic or other issues. We only need a new courthouse in 12 years. Your guess is as good as mine. I would think that we probably would be getting a lot closer to a full replacement, if not a complete rehab. The state is willing to put up 50% in terms of bonds for counties who qualify and go for this program. I'm not sure what you're looking for specifically from the court. We're certainly willing to offer any assistance that we can.
Mm-hmm.
Brought the binder from the 2008 legislature where they started the program, and then in 2009 where we were the first recipient to receive those funds, and that was because we were basically shovel ready through the work of the Court Security Advisory Committee, surveys that had been done. So when those funds became available, we were right at the top of the list and received the lion's share of that money at that same time.
So I didn't check into this a lot. I saw the email come in, and I think I emailed you about it, but was that repair or completely replace in the next 12 years? Because this doesn't have any seismic, doesn't have the single entrance, doesn't have a lot of stuff.
It says here, yes. There's two questions, or two answers. One is, yes, we intend to request state funding or have a strong interest in replacing our courthouse. Or down below talks about what remodeling, that it's more effective than remodeling or repairing. So it really is, at this point, a replacement.
A replacement. So a question I would have of the court is, do you anticipate in the courts needing, you need more court space now in 12 years. What's that going to look like?
Yes. That really comes down to courtrooms, the number of judges and courtrooms.
Mm-hmm.
So right now we have basically every courtroom occupied with a judge. That is because we have a pro bono pro tem judge working with us right now. We've put in yet another request for a compensated either pro tem judge or a referee. So we are at max right now in terms of courtrooms and judges. We will continue to advocate and seek additional full-fledged judgeship in the future because we have not received one since 1982.
Mm-hmm.
So the need for space, it's when it comes to that, it's not just the need for physical space. It's the need for the suitable and sufficient, which in this day and age gets more and more dialed into secure courtrooms. Right now we have judges who walk from their judge's chamber down a public hallway to get to the courtroom. They go to the courtroom, they do their business, they walk out of the courtroom, back down the hallway, where in a better designed court facility, the judge's chamber is located as part of the courtroom. Courtroom 4 is a good example of that. However, we don't have assigned courtroom, so even though courtroom 4 has a judicial chamber attached to it, that judge doesn't exclusively use that courtroom. So there is, it's not just the number of courtrooms, but it's the general layout that has an impact.
And is there a basis that the replacement or remodel is?
Well, the second part of your question is not part of this, I don't think. Replacement is the issue here in 12 years. Excellent.
Yeah, this is really just a questionnaire to find out if we think there's going to be a need or a desire to replace the courthouse in 12 years. I mean, there's no level of commitment. There's no...
Mm-hmm. Well, and then by saying a 50% match, that may be totally different in 12 years, too. It may be 75% or other money made available. So we don't know that. But just knowing, because I remember when I was in the legislature in 2000, we tried to get an additional judge here.
Mm-hmm.
And they would, I think they sent to Jackson County. But anyway.
Yeah. It's tough getting judges.
Yes, it is. It's very hard to get them. So
The question is, to me, if the courthouse is to be replaced, that is not a county issue. That's a state issue. Is that right?
Well, I think I understand what you're saying. The county is obligated by statute to provide court facility.
Right.
But we are not being asked if we can provide this a court security. We're being asked, we want you to replace this court facility.
Well, you're being asked if you think that you'll be in a position or have a need to replace the courthouse.
And we're not obligating anyone or anything here. But I think that what they're trying to do is get an idea from around the state as to which ones are going to have to be replaced, which ones are the priorities, and how much money might be necessary in 10 to 12 years.
Okay, so why would I want to replace this one if I know it's going to cost us X numbers of dollars, at which the bulk of it, I'm assuming, would come from the state? But there's got to be some... You can't issue a mandate. The county is just being building a new courthouse.
Oh, they're not. They're just saying
if you think there'll be a need.
If you think you need a new courthouse because yours is falling down, it's unsafe for public welfare, or whatever, then there's a program out there that would assist counties in replacing courthouses. The state's not. They're not actively seeking going further into bond debt. They're out there, they're recognizing that while the counties have the responsibility to provide court facilities, they're willing to step up and help out.
So major shift.
Because to me, 12 years ago or 12 years in the future wouldn't make any difference structurally as far as the replacement of the courthouse. You know, but basing it on security, you know, those type of things, a major space, then security, I would say, yeah, you probably could replace it.
See, that's been my concern because security is an issue.
But that's
security.
Security
is an issue, but if we think about Klamath Falls, and the reason they have a new courthouse is because of an earthquake, and all the stuff regarding the Cascadia subduction zone. But I think that's kind of a bigger moot point because if that happens, everything's going to come down.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. In 12 years, there may be more funding available for those kinds of things, depending on what happens in the next 12 years. So,
in no circumstances is this obligating Josephine County whatsoever. They're just saying, hey, does anyone foresee a need? Because they're trying to plan ahead. That's really all this is about.
And then who would not say No, we don't have any need for a new facility.
Crook, Jefferson, because they're getting ready to dedicate their new facilities. Multnomah, because they're building a new facility.
Okay.
Klamath has a new facility.
Okay. Clackamas is in the process of replacing their facility.
So we're down to 31 now.
So.
Well, pardon me. I mean, plus, you probably don't want to replace the family court facility, for example.
Right.
So even our county would say a certain.
I'd probably put that one ahead of this one myself.
Oh, would you?
Yes, actually.
That's what I know about that.
Really?
Looks like a nice building.
Yeah, it looks good. Just put together with particle boards and cardboard. It's not good.
Really?
Particle boards is a good one, though.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, it's not going to be a long-lived building, I wouldn't imagine.
I mean, if that's the question, yes, we have two facilities that need replaced.
Or maybe one of you just one facility that co-houses.
Yeah, that would be.
Well, I'm inclined to say you answer yes, because we don't have seismic. We know they're doing a lot of planning in regards to Cascadia. I don't know if that's kind of allied with this or not, but and the fact that we can't reconfigure this building for security for our courts or to make it even more efficient. It's pretty inefficient up there for our courts. So. I would say we can say yes. It doesn't mean we have to obligate anything other than we get on the list. If you say no, we aren't on the list, and 10 years from now, if we need a courthouse, they're going to say, well, you didn't say you needed one.
Right.
You know.
Well, the other aspect of this that comes to play from my standpoint is, why would I want to keep sinking money into a facility that we're going to get rid of in 3 years, 5 years, 8 years, other than doing the basic cosmetic repairs.
Mm-hmm.
And if we're not going to replace it, okay, no. But nature takes its course in one sense, and we'll patch up the big holes in the wall, whatever, but we're not going to change everything around and put in new this and correct that and all of that kind of stuff.
There's a few decisions on the courthouse itself, the glazing on the building itself, that
mm-hmm.
over the next few years we're going to probably be in this substantial money to repair that long
yeah,
term.
It's really weathered a lot the last few years.
Yeah, and so if we decide, well, we're going to go down the new courts avenue, then we have to figure that part out. How we're going to band-aid that.
The other counties that built new courthouses, did they knock down the old courthouse and build on the same property, or did they relocate them?
In Union County, they did. So, and that's another one that they just dedicated just a couple of months ago.
30 back.
But 5 years ago, there were no new courthouses.
I know at one point there was discussion about if a new courthouse was built. I think the facility study that was across the way here acquiring property. And another one was using our existing parking lots to build. And
yeah, I never saw those. So.
I thought.
But usually the courts are in a courthouse. So. Mm-hmm. I mean, I heard talking, but I guess in the old hospital building.
So we'll call it the courthouse.
Yeah, the courthouse.
Yeah, we'll move this on.
Courthouse one, courthouse two.
Yeah.
And yeah, and the courts are in too.
I'm here just to provide some information. My suggestion is that you would, indicate that there is at this point some level of need, because I, as the court administrator, do see a need based on security and knowing kind of what these bones that this building is like. Well, it's pretty solid, lots of marble. If there's any earthquake.
We'll have a lot of marble
right
now. A piece of the rock.
Or headstones.
Or headstones. Keith. Okay, so.
I think the answer to your question is, from my perspective, the answer would be, hey, yes, in 10 years' time, certainly. We're going to have to replace or repair. I mean, certainly one of the two is going to be done.
Yes, and I think Ryan was saying at what point, maybe you, Commissioner, was saying, at what point is it penny-wise pound foolish?
Yeah.
Put the $15 million into repairing it, and you could build a new one for
$30.
Mm-hmm. It depends.
Yeah, well, that's my concern about doing the outside of this building.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I walk down that path out there in the back, and I stop and I look at it, it's like, ooh, it's going to cost,
yeah.
to to refinish that exterior. It's just,
yeah, 2008.
Because, like, as you know, as every project you get into, there's always more.
Yeah. And it's a real specialty area.
It's a specialty area.
In 2008, the replacement was estimated at $27 million.
Mm-hmm. Add another 30-40%. Okay. Well, Commissioner Heck, shall we just say yes? We think there may be a need to do that, and go ahead.
Possibly.
Okay. We have consensus on that, of the two of us that were here. So
if you need additional information regarding the assessments that have been completed and so forth, I can assist with that.
Well, I was going to ask, did you want to respond to that, or did you want to?
This goes to the counties. This is independent of OJD.
Okay. All right. You going to do it, Ryan? Okay. All right.
Yeah, there's that. It's just electronic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is there a...
I think I'd send it to you. I don't know who
did this come electronic? Because I never got this.
I got it.
Yeah, I think I got it, and then I sent it on to Kirk and someone else. Maybe it was finance. I don't know, but it's electronic. I'll see if I can find it for you. It came from AOC. Mm-hmm. So I'll find it for you.
Yeah,
so
this really is an AOC-driven project.
Right. Yeah, they're the ones that always carry the torch with the legislature. Is that right, Wally?
That's right.
And they do. Okay. All right. Thank you very
much,
Kurt.
Thanks for your insertion.
All right.
Good to see you.
So, Ryan, if you need any information from us or from Kirk or whatever, and I will find that and get it emailed over to you. Okay?
You bet.
All right.
All right. Thanks. Pleasure.
Okay. Thank you for coming over. And I'll get in touch with you on that other issue.
Sounds good.
Okay. 3% tax on retail marijuana sales.
Okay, so the discussion of AOC is kind of a nice segue because hot off the presses as of 5/19, this is the status of, to save on color printing, I just printed one, I hope that's okay. But this is the status of the marijuana local option tax that was authorized by Measure 91 and also...
I didn't get this. Can we just get some copies?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
We have a color machine here. We can get color copies for that.
Yeah, I can do that. And as you can see, three counties. I reported to AOC based upon all the prior discussions of this board that we were leaning toward putting it on. And I told them that you had me drafting an ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And so thus we reported. That was part of his legislative report, I think, for committee days.
What was the red, not doing it?
Not doing it.
Not putting it on.
Right. And so geographically, most of the state is not doing it. And some have already committed to doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, so I say all that because in my discussions with Rob Bovet, he didn't have any examples that I could use. This may be the... So it's possible this could go far and wide, or not. I don't know. But in terms of what people are watching to see occur on this issue statewide, this may be the first version of a draft ordinance that anybody gets to see. This may be the first one anyone's ever written. And if they've written them elsewhere, I haven't been able to get a hold of them. So... anyway, so, we've gotten, before we get into the particulars of the ordinance, to whatever degree you want to do that, I do want to outline the calendar with which you have to work in terms of getting this on the ballot. And, of course, laws do require that this would go on to, if you wanted to send it, you don't have to send anything to a ballot. I mean, we're clear on that. But if you do decide to send it to, or you do decide to pursue a local option tax, it does have to be approved by the electors at the next general election, so our November general election. And that's the only way that this could possibly go into effect. That means that your timeline is we would need to have this to the clerk no later than August 19th, and that's a Friday, so to get it out of business session, that's August 17th. It's an ordinance requiring two readings, which means that your first reading would be on July 27th, and your second is going to be on August 10th. And so everything's got to be all locked down. I mean, this is the language, whatever language you want, and this has got to be done. Done as best you can get it before the first reading on July 27th. And, of course, you can have your full formal hearings on that matter, and we can make changes going forward right up until the point of the second reading.
Oh, it's only May.
It's May 31st. And, it's basically June. You got 8 weeks. I mean, so this isn't a rush job, but there's a clock in the background.
Yeah, well, if we can get copies of these so we have no one
yes,
to work with.
Yes, be happy to provide that. This is part of a full-on PowerPoint presentation, actually, 11 or so slides that he put together that gives the status of the marijuana laws throughout the state.
Okay. All right. Should we have her just go make copies right now? Or?
Yeah, I can do that.
Can you make copies of these for all of them? Three for the commissioners, one for each, and then one for the record, and we'll return one to Wally.
I try to be a little bit conservation minded on color printing these days because when I sign those, it's like 75, it's or 7.5 cents or something.
Yeah,
like
no, it's not cheap. But on that, if you didn't have a color, you wouldn't know what it meant because it's color coded.
It wouldn't make any sense.
Oh, this is color coded. What shade of gray?
Yeah.
You know how we used to do those? We used to do the. You remember how the, some of them would have the dashes on them or dots on them or spray
patterns through them.
Yeah. Patterns instead of colors.
That's right. That's right.
Not that old.
Okay, so we met the other day and talked to not the board, but you and me and Eve and
questions.
Ryan Mulkins.
So anyway, we had a meeting and discussed this and. There were some suggested changes in it, so this is the one that has those incorporated in it. Have you had a chance to look and see how that worked out?
Yeah, I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing. So
but you looked for the ones that you had suggested, okay?
Yeah, I think we got them all in there, but, you know, work in progress. So if you catch something, just let us know. All right, well, so Fisher Heck doesn't happen to have a copy in front of him, and so I can provide him with mine. And certainly. Okay, that would be great. What I do want to recommend, I can either go line by line, but that might not be the best plan. What I was going to recommend was that we go over it a little bit today, and then I come back, schedule it, you know, for an agenda session maybe 2 weeks hence or so.
No, maybe a week, because like you say, we're running up against time here. Okay. It's already June, so if we go 2 weeks, it'd be mid-June already. So.
Yes, I'll bring it back like next Thursday's admin. And we can check back in.
Okay.
And so I definitely welcome your comments.
Okay, so just schedule it for the admin with whatever you need to do with Terry out there.
Will do. And that's, admin next week, Commissioner.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to highlight, because this is really, really important in terms of how to actually read this thing, is some of the definitions in here. You know, if you just read it on its surface, it says there is hereby, this is section 5.01, there is hereby levied and shall be paid by every seller a tax on the privilege of distributing or selling retail marijuana and marijuana products to consumers as defined in this ordinance. And that would sound like it's talking about dispensaries and everything. When in reality, in the definitions, that's where the rubber meets the road in terms of who it is we're talking about here.
Right.
And so, as you know, questions come in. my first suggestion would be to direct people toward the definitions. Mm-hmm. And of course, if people have problems with the definitions, then you know we want that feedback. But the definitions are intended to really constrain this to business owners of retail marijuana sales shops.
Recreational.
Thank you. Marijuana, not medicinal.
I think it was on the second page or something where it says did not include.
Right.
But that's right. Yeah. So that's why it's very these definitions.
Right.
Are critical. Same thing with the definition of consumer. This is one we might have to work with going ahead, but as best we can come up with. I did change this a little actually since the other day when we. But I say now consumer. Means a person who purchases, acquires, owns, holds, or uses marijuana or marijuana products other than for the purposes of resale to another person. And we're trying to not sweep in the distributors, basically, if someone goes to a grow site and then buys it, but with the intention of wholesaling it to someone else at a retail shop in Salem or someplace like that. Mm-hmm. So that would not be subject to this tax statutorily.
Yes, that is written to exclude wholesale.
It is written to exclude wholesale, yes. And, of course, House Bill 3400 excludes wholesale. So that is intended to address that point.
The same with the bad consequences of good intentions. If I have my shop and my grow site, and I'm retailing off of my certified store at the front of my property, and I sell it to all of the people who come there for just the idea that. You're going to use this for
your own personal use. So this says consumer means a person who purchases, acquires, holds, owns, or uses marijuana other than for the purpose of resale to another person. So I'm going to resell this to everybody. So
that's a definition. That's retailing. Reselling it is usually means wholesale, not.
But why would I not be prevented saying, yeah, I'm going to buy this stuff, I'll buy it to you for $50, because I'm going to resell it to customers or individuals.
Everybody in the state is licensed. You have a grow license, you have a retail license, you have a wholesale license,
mm-hmm.
you have a processor license. So in order to transfer this to other than a consumer, you have to show what license you have. So if you're a wholesaler, you'll have a wholesale license.
In
a retailer, you have a retailer license.
Yeah. Okay.
That's, I think the difference is between resale and retail. Reselling it is I'm just going to buy it from you and give it to them, and they're going to sell it to someone else. Retailing, I'm selling it to you and I'm making money. So it's almost mm-hmm. the resale is a middleman. Retail is basically the front man. And like you said, though, it comes down to definitions and what somebody understands mm-hmm. of what the definition is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. See, they may be selling it to somebody who has a bakery.
Yeah.
So they're not going to be charging a sales tax to sell it to someone who has a bakery because they're going to be putting it in the product that they are going to be selling retail. But they are going to have a license for processing. And they would show their processing license.
Yeah.
In order to buy it without paying the tax. If you don't have one of those licenses, you won't be able to
transfer the product.
Do we have any idea what is the anticipated revenue generated by all of this red tape hoo-ha?
Not enough.
Not enough.
We're doing this simply because we don't have that many opportunities to do it. If we don't do it, because as the industry matures, then you try to do it later, it ends up being more difficult to do it later. Right now, the legislature has given us this opportunity. This is the first opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we need to take the first opportunity, even though there's only one approved in the county so far, and I don't even know if they're open yet.
Mm-hmm.
Although there are dispensaries, medical mm-hmm. dispensaries, that are selling retail right now. But
so they should be collecting tax.
They are. They're paying
that.
The state. So that would be, as far as I know, there's only like two or three of those, to my knowledge. One in Murphy and one in IV.
One in Merlin?
Is there one in Merlin?
I know there's two dispensaries out there. I don't know
if they're selling.
I think one is selling retail. I'm not sure about the other one.
Yeah.
Or recreational.
Because mm-hmm. they were given that option since they didn't have the administrative rules ready. Okay. So anyway, to alleviate your fears on that, as far as you have to have a license to be able to do, you say, I'm buying this for the bakery, or I'm buying this for the cannery, or I'm buying it to process into chewing gum or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yuck. I saw you cringe. Yeah. Good. Hey, everyone's tastes are different.
That's true.
Additionally, where was I? Okay. Oh, and additionally, so back to the definitions. So it says that it's hereby levied and shall be paid by every seller a tax. So at some point, the stuff, if it gets sold, you know, in Commissioner Heck's analogy,
he's the consumer.
So yeah. So at some point, the consumer is going to buy the marijuana. Well, the seller is then on the hook for the tax.
Mm-hmm. And they collect that from the customer.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So can't be selling marijuana unless you've got license from the state. And at some point, there is a customer at the end of this chain. The person just before the customer is who pays the tax.
Can I give it away if I'm the grower?
Yeah, because if the price is zero, then what's 3% of zero?
Right.
It's still zero.
Right. And then you and I have a deal. You're going to buy me every lunch for the next every day you see me, kind of thing.
That's consideration.
Definitions. Yes.
Well, that's consideration, but I mean, there's nothing to be considered because we're friends. And yeah, I mean, it just seemed to be, I don't know,
I can see who our biggest consumer is going to be. Just kidding. Just kidding.
Don't be free.
Oh, you got to find some humor in all this.
Oh, boy.
It's so detailed. Okay. All right. Please continue.
Okay. So, I mean, that's... What else is there?
Just on the definitions, that's fine. And the way I'm understanding this is, quarterly, they're going to come in to me. Well, first off, and I just love number 501, thank you very much. Everybody has to register with me and let me know. Oh, 504?
Yeah, 504.
Okay, 504.
That's new.
Sorry. Yes, everybody has to register with me so I know who's out there and who I'm supposed to be collecting for.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come in quarterly on the 15th of January, April, July, and October, which are really good months for me, too, by the way. Thank you. And this is all of my tax collection dates. So they're going to come in, they're going to present their documentation, their records. Basically, it's the same thing that they present to the state. I'm going to know how much they've done retail. I take 3% of that. They're going to give me money. We're still working on how I'm going to track this. And we just deposit it into an account, do the coding through our financial package, and then divvied up on the next quarter, I would say like the end of that month.
How does all this work with the handling of monies and stuff, which you cannot do as far as checks and that kind of thing goes? I mean,
no checks. We're probably going to be cash only.
But if you're taking money from a registered marijuana dispensary, how in the heck can you say this cash is not from a federally violating agency? I mean, I don't see where's the leeway for that?
The state's accepting it.
That's basically what I have to base that on, is if the state can accept it and put it into their banks, I'm going to have to do the same thing.
I think the bank accepted like $38 million, didn't they, recently, for the last few months?
And that's just it. And I really don't think the banks are looking that closely at it. I also know that basically it's going to get commingled with everything else that we do. I mean, it's not going to be any more smelly than what I get in December, November for property taxes.
Yeah.
or last Friday. So that's just basically, it's going to have to be just overlooked, and it's going to go to the bank, and they're going to take it, and it's basically now it's laundered. You know.
The state is doing it.
Yes.
So the state.
And the state uses
U.S. Bank. We're an extension of the state.
That's who we use, U.S. Bank.
And the bank has authorized us to collect it.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of.
Well, if you don't care, it doesn't make any difference.
There you go. Kind of in that, it's kind of moving to a gray area now.
I do know that the federal government is. I think it's one of their goals. I've seen it in more places than one to delist marijuana over the next year.
I said in the next 5 years it has to be delisted.
Yeah, but I think they're trying to get that done this year.
Yeah.
So, because they see what's happening. They know what's happening. So. But I'm glad that that's in there. So what I wanted, and of course, 5.04, the notice of operation with the Chesapeake County tax collector. Okay.
That's new since the last draft.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Draft 3.
Uh-huh. So. Right. Okay. Any of these other definitions that you need to explain that's any different from what it appears to be?
Let's see. I changed any of the others. Yeah, I did. I just adjusted the E 301E, the definition of marijuana, because the definition of marijuana could change at a statewide level. At this point, I'm thinking it's best just to tie our definition to the statutory definition.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we've particularly excluded industrial hemp there. And I did, since draft 2, I did change certain sections of section 5. I had been saying, for example, section 5.03, it used to say every seller shall be entitled to a deduction against the tax. But I changed that to every business owner, because a seller is the guy who works at the counter, even.
Mm-hmm.
See.
Yeah.
So there's an important distinction there. And it's, I think, appropriate for section 5.01 to levy on every seller, to levy a tax on every seller. But ultimately, the business owner, though, is the one responsible for paying to the tax collector. So that's
Right.
An interesting distinction, but and you might get some input about that.
Why I missed this one. The 501 using every seller. Why would you not use the every business owner up there as well?
Because then you risk not roping in the person who buys it from a business owner and then sells it to his buddy. And technically, you want to get that person wrapped in as well. I think it's
and then too, just more comprehensive. It comes down to like what he just said. The seller could be the cashier in the front, not necessarily just the business owner. So the business owner says, I'm not selling it, I just own the business.
Yeah.
To me, it would be easily defensible in the sense of saying, you're the business owner, Jack. What goes out that door is your product.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And if I don't care if Jim Bob sold it, you're responsible for it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I just think it was causing a needless sense of differentiation between every business owner and every seller. Because if you've got old Jim Bob, who's, 19, he's working down in some shop and he's selling. He's the guy who's running the cash register and stuff. He is by this. He is the seller.
Yeah.
He is responsible to pay the tax.
Well, he's actually an agent of the seller. Under the state law, the sales license goes to the business owner.
Yeah, and I'm saying that to me that would be more consistent because if you're just putting on the every seller a tax, then I mean you open up a whole to me a Pandora's box if you've got eight people selling for this business. All these sellers are obligated to pay the tax according to this 501.
Yes, they are. So, on the other hand, I have to look at a loophole that we don't want to create. Which is, as you described, well, I'm just a business owner. I don't sell this stuff. I'm just the owner. And so I'll continue to tinker with that.
Yeah, because, I mean, the business owner, like if you didn't clap on, this guy's working for you, man.
Yeah, he's the agent.
Yeah. He is. You're responsible for him. If he wants to do something illegal, you can be sued for that because you're the business owner.
Maybe it should be... Because the retail license is issued to an entity, and maybe that should be tied to the retail licensee.
Mm.
Or any business owner or agent of that business.
That could get us there, too.
That covers everybody under his purview.
They're selling under a license.
Yeah, I like the idea.
It's tied to the licensee, the retail mm-hmm. licensee. Mm-hmm. Then in both of these instances, where be tied to the retail licensee, then any of and any of their agents,
right?
Then because they have to sell under that license, they cannot sell it outside the license,
mm-hmm.
right?
Legally,
right? Right.
No, I like that idea under the license and then whatever permutations that would come from there.
Mm.
But the primary one is the licensee. He's the one responsible for what goes out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So check that one out.
I'm going to continue. Different options.
And you may have to do something under the definition.
Yeah, that's right.
Any reference to seller or business owner is reference to the individual holding the license and your agent.
That is right there. So that one fits already.
We do have that as well.
So it would be just changing the wording up here a little bit. Every seller, business owner, or agent.
Mm-hmm.
License. As described in G.
Yes.
Owner of business or business owner means that person or entity, holding the license from a liquor control commission. So,
mm-hmm.
that's covered.
I don't want the guy who goes around and buys it with the purpose of selling it to someone else, thus avoiding the tax,
mm-hmm.
and then he shows up to the, to the Powderhorn or whatever, and he's selling it to put in the brownies. I don't know what they're going to do with it. But now, he's not the business owner or the licensee. He's the seller, probably operating outside of the law, but now, in any event, he wouldn't be covered by our ordinance in that scenario. I don't want to create a tax dodge.
Mm-hmm.
And so mm-hmm. it's all going to come down to this very fine points of language,
mm-hmm.
most of which is going to center on the definitions. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, if it can be abused, it will be.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So just try to figure out the best way
the broadest
to pen them in to the mm-hmm. definitions or the if it can be, it will be.
One thing is important to know too, this is just kind of an aside, in doing all of this is that the state is currently charging, I think, 24%, and they're going to reduce it to 17, and that's why they give us the opportunity for 3, which will bring it back up to 20. But because some people have said, well, that's on top of 20. No, it's not on top of. Mm-hmm. They're going to be reducing that. So, okay. All right, anything else we need to have pointed out here?
Right, no, at this point, actually there is. Okay, so 6.03. When discussing this in my office, we thought about, this is section 6.03.
Okay.
And originally, in the last draft, I had put they had 10 days to deliver a statement after the notice of noncompliance. Then we started to think about the actual pace of, mail.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, it takes 3 days to get there, and then 3 days for the turnaround. Anyway, so I thought maybe 21 would be a better starting point, and then, if you wanted to adjust that, sure. But I
think the business owners could be living in Florida.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's probably better just to...
Yeah.
And the system is that basically the board doesn't become involved until, the 45-day mark. Yeah, it's all handled by the tax collector. The tax collector, will send out a notice of noncompliance, and so that's the first flag to the business owner that they are not compliant.
Mm-hmm.
And then if the tax collector doesn't hear anything from them, the tax collector will estimate what the tax would have been and communicate that to the owner. Failure to pay the tax will result in a percentage penalty, as detailed in Section 701. And if the business owner then disputes the tax, at that point they will have an opportunity to file notice of not an appeal necessarily, but a request for a hearing, basically.
If they're aggrieved, an aggrieved may appeal to imposition imposed.
Oh yeah. They've also got the circuit
court review.
But yeah.
Okay. So it's the second aggrieved.
Yeah, so there's two levels of appeal, basically. The tax collector makes a decision and sends out a notice of noncompliance. The person can then request a hearing from the Board of County Commissioners. The Board of County Commissioners would then make a decision on the matter, mm-hmm. and the person could then subsequently appeal to the circuit court.
For judicial review. So the failure to pay percentages of 10 and 30%, that's standard, or is that developed for here?
This is all new, so I'm assuming that's... I don't know, we're going to set the standard, or...
I think that's right. I mean,
nobody's done it yet.
I'll tell you where I got that was from the last version of the tax ordinance from last year. It was in that draft,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know where that came from. That landed in my file. I thought, okay, we'll start there, and then...
Mm-hmm.
But I think we're making that up as we go along.
Okay.
Well, when nobody else has paved the way, somebody has to pave the way.
Yes.
So... now, the other question I have, as far as we haven't decided on the disposition of any of the marijuana tax money as yet, that meeting is being held on the 6th, right? Lipstick is meeting the
6th. Have I been invited to that one yet?
I saw a letter from Diane Hoover. I got a copy.
She who has access to calendars.
June 6th?
Yeah.
I don't
see anything. Yeah, I didn't see that I was invited to any of that.
Anyway, we haven't decided, but that doesn't mean this couldn't be different or separate from.
Okay.
Because what that one was is the money we get from the state. This is money that we are collecting.
Mm.
So do we need to put in here how that money will be dispersed?
My suggestion would be no, because that would, if it's in there, that it's locked in.
I think that's more of a policy or procedure.
Okay. I just want to make sure that everybody's talked about it,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to be any great amount of money.
Well, that's the thing, too.
One dispensary so far, or if they take in the others, it would be a total of 4.
Yeah.
Why is June 6th light?
There's something about the lipstick meeting.
But it's like a holiday, I remember.
June 6th?
I mean, on the calendar. It's light print. It's not it could be a national holiday in Canada or something.
Yeah.
It's the first of Ramadan.
Oh, that's probably what we're saying.
Okay, we're celebrating Ramadan.
There we go.
Yeah.
thought that was included under Thanksgiving.
Well, I don't know. I thought she was trying to schedule it for next week. So you might want to check with Diane Hoover, because I saw something come in as a copy to me.
Okay.
Okay. So if she has something scheduled, you do need to know about that.
Yeah.
Since you're on that committee. Okay. Anything else that we need to know about this?
Let's see. Well, I do want to note that there's basically three lanes, at least from my perspective, emerging in the marijuana conversation, and all of them are going to kind of pop up pretty soon. There's the one that's going to come up next on Thursday, which is in regards to the planning department.
Mm-hmm.
And so just as a primer on that, that's not going to have anything to do with the tax. That's a different matter. That is entirely addressing the Rural Land Development Code. And two commissioners have come forward so far with different ideas of amending or of having the planning department and the planning commission explore the idea of amending either for setbacks for grow operations in rural residential and for fence height requirements for grow operations in rural residential. So anyway, what I did was I put those both into the same resolution. And you'll see the wording of that, which is coming up on Thursday, is intended to be that, okay, you want the commission to look at these matters, but then if something else comes up, we don't have to come back to you for a resolution every mm-hmm. time the topic of marijuana comes up, regarding the planning commission.
Okay.
So that's going to
be. There is a planning commission hearing on June 6th on the other issue.
Yes. There is. And that's a whole other issue.
That's another planning.
One. So there's that. And then finally, there was. Commissioner Walker had said that the board wanted an additional ordinance regarding a registration, a business registration for marijuana and businesses, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I've worked on this one so far. I haven't done anything on that. Mm-hmm. Not a lot on that yet, but
right. I've talked to a couple of people in the marijuana business and told them that my intent as far as a business license for marijuana businesses, which is all marijuana, not just retail, but marijuana businesses, because anytime there's an industry that they keep saying they want us to help them, or they, you know, why didn't we know about this, is that if we don't know who you are or where you are, we can't help you. We can't notify you. But if we have a business license where they're registered and we have an issue come up, we can just send a notice out to everybody. And it's not something where we're going to be, you know, trying to be restrictive. It's an idea of trying to facilitate it, because I know just sure as this, I mean, we'll make announcements, we'll advertise it, we'll put it in the paper, we'll do press releases, we'll do all that, and invariably, just like happened last time, they're going to come forward, we didn't know about this. Well, that's because you register with the state and with confidential information on a lot of this, we can't find out who you are. So if we have a registration business license, then we won't know who you are. So we can send you notices. Come to this meeting. This is what we're talking about. This is what we're thinking about. You know, we want your input. So, and if there's people coming here, I've had people inquire, well, how many growers do you have? We're thinking about putting in a business to supply growers whatever product. And it's like, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So if we don't know, how can we foster further development?
Yeah.
Now fly over. I flew over one day, and it's amazing how many mm-hmm. places are down there. But We can't help them if we don't know
who it is.
And and I know that's been one of my frustrations as far as economic development. Well, you need to be doing this for businesses, and it's like, okay, how many do we have that do that kind of business? We don't know.
I mean, the only difficulty that I have in that whole thing is the folks that are involved in this kind of a business are by nature resistant to any kind of government interference or government involvement.
And very secretive.
And very secretive. That's who they are.
And that's because they've been in business. Many of them have been in business for 20, 30, 40 years, and they had to be because it was criminal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's no longer that way in Oregon. It probably won't be that way nationally much longer. But the whole point of it is that they come to you saying, well, can you help me do this, or can you help me do that, or why aren't you doing this, or why aren't you doing that? And it's like, really? How? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And
we don't have the information, we can't assume it.
Exactly. And just like the inquiries I've had, you know, say, well, how many people do you have that are growing, or how many people are wholesalers? I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no problem with saying that is none of my concern.
Yeah, but if they're wanting some references...
Then that's their problem to solve, not their problem to put on me to solve.
No, we're not solving it. We can
it's just a resource.
It's a resource to help them. If we have wholesalers that want to expand their businesses and we know who they are,
mm-hmm.
that will help them. So.
Okay. So yeah, just to tag on. So as the discussion kind of continues on, and this is, I think, a completely different question.
Yeah, they're all they're a little different. We're keeping them. We can only do the one issue thing.
Yes. Single subject. So for all intents and purposes, the 3% tax on retail sales has absolutely nothing to do with the separate conversation.
Yeah, separate. So.
Yeah.
Okay, well, once you read through that, if you see anything else, and you too, we just get back to Wally with that.
Okay.
And so you want to put it on for... I want to tell you, before we set time, I had Terry schedule some town halls on marijuana, titled Marijuana Planning Ahead.
Okay.
And... we have one scheduled in Williams on June 9th. We have one scheduled in Wolf Creek on June 14th. One scheduled at the Ann Basker on June 23rd. And one scheduled in Cave Junction on the 28th, all in June.
Okay.
And so it might be, I don't know if you want to attend, but it might be a good idea so you could answer questions if you...
Yes, I think I would like to attend. I'll get a copy of that from Terry.
Okay, I think Terry... Yeah, because I think it'd be a good idea that those people who are going to be dealing with the public, even Eve will be dealing with the public, and you on these, you'll be able to answer some of the legal things perhaps that they come up about. But and she has advertised this so we can all attend. So I think we need to be there just to say this is what we're looking at, this is what we've done so far, this is what we're planning on doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we want your input. And I also have devised a, I took Congressman Walden's little town hall form and revised it for the county, and so we can take some of those forms, and if somebody doesn't want to ask a question publicly, they can write it out and give it to us, you know, because some people are shy or don't want to ask or whatever, so
yes.
Some people say, my question is kind of stupid. Well, there's no stupid questions. There's, you know, never. But they feel that way, so they give them an opportunity to write it down.
Okay.
And so that's what we'll get the copy of this, have it out
great.
To you, and if you plan to attend, it would be great.
Yeah.
That way we have all the players there that can answer questions, you know, just like the one on the filing with a clerk. Why do we have to file with a clerk? Well, so that we can track payments you make to make sure that we're crediting the right person and make sure the right person's reporting and that kind of thing. So, okay.
Good.
Anything else, Commissioner Heck?
Nope.
No.
Okay.
Very good. Thank you, Wally.
Yes,
thank you, Eve.
Mm-hmm.
And thanks for bringing these things in, too. This
yes.
is helpful. So.
Yeah, I'll forward that whole PowerPoint presentation over to you, and you can have the whole thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. That
pretty efficient.
I was just wondering, this little white place here, is that a survey mistake?
Oh,
that's a neutral party.
Yeah. No
land.
Isn't that funny?
That's a no pot land.
Yeah, there you go. Isn't that funny?
Oh.
It's just the way probably that it was scanned.
Yeah.
Those are your copies.
Oh, yeah.
Those are your original. Yeah. Copies are your original. Okay. And I will get this cut out to you also.
Do you remember how far the setback is?
Yeah, it was recommended that they look at, I think, a 25-foot setback. But the process, of course, is that they're simply recommending to the planning director to initiate an application.
Mm-hmm.
That would then go to a planning commission and would be fully vetted through that process.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally would come to the board if there is a recommendation.
Is it an RR5 stuff?
It is.
Yeah.
Exclusively in rural
residential. Who recommended
it? It was, okay, yeah, Commissioner Walker had an idea for a setback. Commissioner Hare had an idea for fence height. And then I sort of sensed that I was going to get maybe a trickle of these things coming in. And rather than bring in a new resolution every time, you know, some idea wanted to be, I thought, okay, well.
Do you have an idea about it?
I'm not in favor of the fence height. I mean, that to me is just, it uglifies the whole area.
Well, the state has a requirement that it be screened from view And isn't that an 8-foot fence?
I believe it is.
Is what they say?
Yeah.
But
so I don't know that we need to get in the fray on that one.
Yeah. Maybe not.
Yeah.
Maybe
from
not.
Anything.
I don't know. But
like the one that's on my arena fence.
But how do you, you've got property that you are here, a house is here, and they're here, and they've got an 8-foot fence. What difference does that make to this neighbor?
Well, if you're up above, it doesn't make any difference.
Make
if you're down below, it makes a lot of difference.
Well, yeah, but I'm just saying that to have an arbitrary height set up,
I think the state has addressed that. It's an 8-foot fence that's required by the state. So I don't know that we need to get in that.
Yeah, and that's, I don't want to, you know, I'm satisfied with what the state is saying. You have to have 8-foot fence. They say that, fine, good, I can live with that.
They did not address, at the state, they did not address setbacks on rural residential property, and that's one thing that's concerned me.
Sure.
And I think we need to deal with that one for sure. And whatever, I mean, I don't know what Commissioner Hare was requesting, but maybe he's requesting the type of fence. I don't know. But,
yeah, maybe.
Yeah. But
what is the suggestion for setbacks that you've received so far?
25 foot.
From property lines.
Yeah.
Unless there's an agreement with a neighbor that it can be closer.
Yes.
Because if you have a neighbor next door and you're both growing and you both don't care, that's different.
Darn.
I can't. Yeah. I just.
Well, you don't have to consent.
Yeah, that's
to me.
That's only half of the people.
To me, the 25 foot is barely minimal. If you are in a situation where your house is here and you're 20 feet from the property line, let's just say, I'm hypothesizing, and your neighbor is over there, he's gonna have a 25 foot setback. You know, I'm not sure if that would make that big of a difference as far as. I'm certainly not thinking about it. It'll be a 400 foot setback or something, you know. But is 50 feet, is that more punitive or is that?
Well, when you're talking about rural residential property,
mm-hmm.
as Eve probably knows, not all rural residential property is 5 acres.
Right? Oh yeah.
Some rural residential property is even an acre. So if you start getting very large setbacks and they want to grow their 4 plants or 6 plants, there's no place for them to grow their plants. But what I'm trying to look at is trying to accommodate the most number of people. If you have a 25-foot setback, one person I know, the complaint they have is they plant these plants right up against the fence,
sure.
and the leaves are sticking through the fence,
sure.
and the kids' balls go over in the fence, and, you know, it's a mess because it's right up against the fence. If there was a space, you wouldn't have that feeling of it overpowering you, even though you'll be able to smell it in September.
Yeah.
I mean, that odor, you just cannot... I mean, it permeates the air.
Right.
So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got pot and I have hogs. But for me, a 25 setback for me is just going to be a better visual because right now that fence literally is on my arena fence from consent from my husband, of course. But they've just built it right on my arena fence. If it was 25 feet off of that fence, it's going to be less offensive to me visually.
Mm-hmm.
Because you know, and my horses would be less offended.
Yeah, because when it's right up against your fence line, it becomes an annoyance every time you're out there because you see it, it's there, it's hanging over your fence.
It's ugly.
Some of those plants, you know, the fence is 8 feet, but some of those plants
12, 14
feet. I mean, it gets huge, some of them. So if you have a setback visually, you will not be seeing it. It will not be over your fence. It will not be growing through your fence.
I'm not arguing about the setback. I'm just questioning. Is it 25 feet? Is that an adequate setback?
Well, if the lot's only a 80 by 100.
But there again, that then becomes somebody else's problem. I mean.
Because then they have such a very long, narrow grow.
Yeah. I'm just saying.
Get those marijuana plants and just grow straight up, flat on the sides.
There are certain things you cannot do on a piece of property because there's not adequate room to do it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Maybe that property, because of the small size of the lot you have to have a 25, 50, or whatever setback. You can't grow pot. You can't grow cannabis. You cannot grow, I'm sorry, that lot is not adequate size to allow it to happen. I don't know.
Okay, our own county code allows agricultural operations on the farm.
Yeah.
It's a farm on a rural residential property.
Yes.
So because we allow it,
mm-hmm.
if we don't try to accommodate it, someone could say that we are being too restrictive. I just don't want us to end up in a position where people are, you know, in such a place that they might sue us because we're not letting them farm.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah, well,
and so if you put a reasonable setback, unless your neighbor consents, and if your neighbor consents, then I hope you put that in there, that if they have a written authorization from the adjoining property line, and then they could do it.
In one version I did. I'll have to take a look. I mean, but basically what you'd be sending the planning director or just is the authorization to look into these questions.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so that's...
And she starts tomorrow, so you suppose she can have this done by next week?
Yeah.
Poor woman.
Yeah, she you are.
And yes, this will be the initiation by far.
Yeah. So, yeah, she starts tomorrow. So, anyway, good job.
Okay.
We have our work cut out for us. Thank you both. Okay, Commissioner, do we have anything else we need to talk about today? No other stuff? Okay. Marijuana kind of took the...
And just take all the zip out of your...
Okay. All right. It is 4 p.m. and we are adjourned.